Welcome to Science in Your Shopping Cart, a new series that shows how science touches many of the products you buy at the grocery store, from new varieties of fruits and vegetables to technological advances that make your food safer, cheaper, and tastier. I'm Todd Silver.
Back at the grocery store. Wasn't I just here yesterday? Where's my list? Butter, oranges, peaches. Got it.
Grocery shopping can certainly be a balancing act. On the one hand, you want to buy food that you and the family will enjoy, so taste matters. On the other, you want to eat healthy, but finding that balance is a challenge. Here at ARS, we love food as much as you do, and we're also conscious of making healthy food choices. That's why in this episode, we're going to show you a trio of new peaches, healthier margarines, new beer hops, tasty and healthy wraps, and even, get this, a self-fertilizing almond. But first, let's travel to the decadent, sweet, savory land of milk chocolate. It's funny, but when I think of milk chocolate, the first picture in my mind is that river of chocolate in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I try not to think about the Oompa Loompas. Their hair and outfits freak me out. Okay, back to sweet and savory milk chocolate. Am I the only one craving a chocolate bar right now? Hardly. The US imports around $5 billion in cocoa and chocolate products annually, and we produce millions of pounds of chocolate for consumers. The health benefits of dark chocolate are pretty well known. Mainly, it has more antioxidants than milk chocolate because it contains more cocoa solids, but dark chocolate can be brittle and taste bitter. What if we could make milk chocolate as healthy as dark chocolate without sacrificing taste? And what if we could do it by adding a low-value agricultural byproduct, such as peanut skins? To find out if this is possible, I met with food technologist Dr. Lisa Dean at ARS's Food Science and Market Quality and Handling Research Unit in Raleigh, North Carolina.
We've been seeing a lot in the literature, all this research goes on for what's called functional foods and nutraceuticals, compounds such as catechins, tannins, in products such as tea, coffee grounds, grape skins. We're getting a lot of press because of those compounds and the functional characteristics that they have, in particular antioxidant activity. And agricultural waste is really, you know, a major problem. We have a process for peanuts where we take that red skin off because it's not desired in the final product, especially in peanut butter. So you can imagine here in the U.S. where we grow about 3 million metric tons of peanuts every year, we have this big waste issue. And former scientist Dr. Jack Davis started thinking about how can we capture this material rather than just throwing it away.
Unfortunately, peanut skins are high in tannins, which give them a bitter taste, so skins are usually removed in processing during blanching or dry roasting. Because 50% or more of the peanuts grown in the U.S. are made into peanut butter, all of those removed skins are a major source of processing waste for the industry. Dr. Dean worked with students from North Carolina State University's Food Science Department to figure out how to get more value out of the peanut skins.
They came up with a process where we can extract out the compounds, which in the peanut skins is about 15% of the peanut skin are these compounds. That's a lot of material. And came up with a way to encapsulate it into maltodextrin, which is a large sugar molecule that mainly is extracted from corn. And it's a food-grade material. You'll see it on the labels of a lot of processed food. But you can encapsulate the peanut skin material into the maltodextrin, and then you have a free-flowing powder that you can handle.
The process to turn the peanut skins into a maltodextrin has two major benefits for consumers. First, it removes the bitterness of the skins. And second, it creates this antioxidant-rich powder that can be used in a variety of applications. Dr. Dean has been approached by different companies for possibly adding this powder to their foods. However, she's very conscious of making sure this powder does not get consumed by those with a nut allergy.
You can't put peanuts into food that people don't know about. So as we started working with this, we thought, what goes well with peanuts? Chocolate. Of the top 10 candy bars in the U.S., 5 of them contain peanuts.
Chocolate already has an antioxidant-rich variety. That would be dark chocolate, which gets its health benefits from the cocoa leaves. The more cocoa compounds that are added to dark chocolate, the greater the health benefit. However, the bitterness also increases with the added cocoa compounds. Dark chocolate could also be brittle, and most cocoa is imported and can be expensive, certainly more expensive than discarded peanut skins.
People prefer milk chocolate because it melts in your mouth, it's really smooth, but it doesn't have those compounds the way dark chocolate does. So this was kind of a way to put the material in, hide it, so consumers would get the benefits without having the negative aspects of eating dark chocolate.
As you might expect, one of the challenges was finding just the right balance when adding in the peanut skin powder to milk chocolate. They wanted it to have just as much antioxidant punch as dark chocolate, but still offer the sensory traits of milk chocolate. Dr. Dean and her research group tested her new chocolate against milk chocolate already on the market. And how did consumers rate her healthier chocolate?
What we found was we could add the peanut skins so the antioxidant activity was equal to dark chocolate, but consumers couldn't taste the difference. The texture wasn't different. It was perfectly acceptable.
The next step is convincing peanut farmers that this new process can add value to their bottom line while also benefiting the environment. As previously mentioned, up to 15% of peanut skins are removed during processing due to its bitterness. The discarded skins are often either taken to a dump or used in cattle feed. While the cattle feed offers a little value for peanut farmers, only a small amount could be used because of its bitterness. Cattle don't like bitter food any more than you or I. Adding the peanut skins to milk chocolate and other foods gives the peanut farmers a new revenue stream for their byproduct. As an aside, peanut skins are also antimicrobial and can be added to chicken feeds and other livestock feed as an alternative to antibiotics.
Here in North Carolina, we have a sizable peanut processing industry, and they all say, you know, we've been looking forever to find something to do with these skins, you know, besides throw them away. So as we look at sustainability of crops, value of material, this is all coming to the forefront now.
With such a mass amount of peanut skins available, scaling up for commercial use shouldn't be a problem. The challenge is finding the right partnerships between the peanut farmers and the food industry to produce a healthier milk chocolate. And that will certainly put a smile on the face of chocolate lovers, both young and, like me, young at heart. Maybe you haven't noticed, or perhaps you're at one right now, but breweries are popping up everywhere. Beer is a major commodity in the US, both for imports and exports, and the small batch market has exploded over the past decade. This not only includes IPAs, sours, milk stouts, Mexican lagers, and my favorite, Hefeweizens, but also non-alcoholic brews as well. And with all these new varieties comes increased demand for hops, the primary ingredient in most beers. Man, all this beer talk is making me thirsty. Is it happy hour yet? Today we're traveling to Corvallis, Oregon to meet with ARS research geneticist John Henning. Here at the Forage Seed and Cereal Research Unit, John and his team recently released two new hop varieties, Vista and Triumph.
They both play really well with other hops in a brew, particularly Vista. A lot of the brewers that I've spoken to have tried it in their mixtures of pre-existing brews that they do, and it is really flavor added. It doesn't seem to conflict with, you know, your citrus or mosaic or anything like that. It tends to add more to the flavor to what was previously given. But at the same time, they're both very unique hops. Triumph with its real bazooka bubblegum flavor, that's pretty unique in the whole market realm. And then Vista with its real strong citrus, melon, pear, fruit, tropical fruit flavors. They're both new and unique. That's why I think they're going to be both pretty successful.
John and his team have developed and released 11 hop varieties, including the popular Mount Rainier, a mild hop with a nice aroma and is European in its noble hop flavor. It's also a higher yielding line, which is a big ask from the brewers.
A lot of times some of these really prized hop varieties are not real high yielding as well. And so the brewers have to pay a higher amount in order to make it worth the growers' efforts to grow those things. So it is a massive issue for brewers.
Yield is important, but let's face it, taste matters. And so does aroma and finishing qualities that beer drinkers savor in their favorite brews. John works closely with brewers, often conducting what he calls rub-and-sniff analysis to help determine which hops have the most potential. They also discuss other factors, including yield, disease resistance, and whether the hops are easy to pick.
My heart is kind of with the grower, and so I'm pretty concerned about yield, disease resistance. You know, if a grower doesn't have to be spraying all the time with pesticides because there's natural resistance, then that's better for everyone all around. I'm looking for how well that hop will pick in a harvest picker. A lot of times hop varieties can do what we call shatter, where it gets to the picker and then the hop cone explodes and you have no hop cones at the end of that.
I happened to be talking with a friend about this episode, over a beer of course, and he asked me a good question. Why is ARS, an agricultural research agency, developing hop varieties for brewers?
There is actually a very strong demand by the brewery industry for public hops. Part of that is with private hops, there's some restrictions in places where they can be grown and who can grow them. With public hops, anybody can grow them. Any brewer can buy them. There's no royalties associated with them. So typically the price is going to be a little bit less than what they would have to pay for a proprietary hop variety. When the USDA releases it, it's free for anyone to grow anywhere they want and to sell it to whomever they want.
By working closely with brewers, John is able to gain immediate feedback on his new hop candidates, and some are even willing to trial them in their fields. This collaboration has enabled John and his team to cut the time it takes to bring a new hop variety to market in half. After releasing Vista and Triumph, John notes that 5 more varieties are on the horizon. Working at ARS and developing new hop varieties for brewers? It's not a bad gig if you can get it. I asked John what he loves most about his job.
My favorite is harvest. Harvest is awesome. It's hard work. You know, you're just busting the whole time and getting things done. They're long days. It's hot, but there's no better time than that for my job.
I'll certainly cheers to that. Nothing says summer like a bright, juicy, gush-in-your-mouth peach. The value of fresh and processed peaches was estimated at over $500 million for 2018, according to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. Wouldn't it be great if peaches were in season longer? Well, leave it to the growers in the Peach State, Georgia, to make that happen. Today we're traveling to Byron, Georgia, to the ARS Fruit and Tree Nut Research Unit, and we're visiting with research horticulturist Train Shen Chen. Dr. Chen and his group recently released 3 new peach cultivars, Rich Joy, Crimson Joy, and Liberty Joy.
Rich Joy is a late ripened peach with very good color, very uniform size, and rich flavors. That's why we give the name Rich Joy.
Rich Joy is named for the fruit's rich flavor, and as a way to honor ARS peach breeder William Richardson Oakey, who retired in 2010. Oakey is known for having developed the series of Prince peach cultivars, which are still in commercial use. Crimson Joy is named for its almost fully red blush skin, and Liberty Joy gets its name because it ripens near the 4th of July. The 3 Joy peaches are all yellow-fleshed. They soften slowly to a smooth, buttery texture, it's a trait called melting, and they carry well-balanced sugar-acid ratios. All 3 peaches also have different chill requirements. The chill requirement is the minimum time a fruit-bearing tree must be exposed to temperatures below 45 degrees Fahrenheit before it will blossom. Rich Joy has a chill requirement of 850 hours. Crimson Joy's chill requirement is 700 hours. And Liberty Joy's chill requirement is 650 hours.
This cultivar is highly tolerant to the frame freeze. And this cultivar has been survived multiple freeze incidents in Byron. So we hope the industry find it's a good supplementary for the cultivars which have a lower chill requirement but can survive in the regular freeze time.
Dr. Chen explained that these new cultivars continue to be needed because the southeastern peach industry is facing multiple challenges, including more occurrences of warm winters and spring freezes, which can change chilling requirements.
So generally, the industry needs about 20 to 30 cultivars to cover from mid-May to early August, the 3 months of production period.
As a late-season cultivar, Rich Joy ripens around mid-July. It's an attractive, large, firm, premium fruit that appears to soften slowly on the tree, which allows it to be picked over a relatively longer period compared to other cultivars. This gives peach growers greater flexibility when harvesting. Liberty Joy will typically ripen in late June to early July. Liberty Joy and Crimson Joy also appear to be less vulnerable to spring freezes. Durability is another preferred trait, especially for the shipping and packaging industries in Georgia, South Carolina, and other areas in the South. Dr. Chen is confident that his new Joy peaches can stand up to the rigors of these processes.
They can sustain pretty harsh conditions during the packing and handling.
The bigger issue with growing peaches is disease and insect tolerance. Flies, beetles, and other bugs love peaches, and some can spread diseases to the peaches. The plum curculio, also known as a snout beetle, is one of the most serious pests in the industry.
Plum curculio is one tiny insect that can get infested inside the fruit, and then outside it looks normal, but the inside is already full of larvae of this insect.
Older peach cultivars, we're talking thousands of years old. They have good resistance to insects and diseases, but they're also small, hard, and bitter tasting. Over time, as new lines have been bred to improve size, color, firmness, and taste, a lot of the peach's defense mechanisms have disappeared. Dr. Chen and his team are working on breeding new lines that incorporate all the sensory traits for consumers, along with the insect and disease-resistant properties that growers are looking for.
Breeding is a long, comprehensive process. We have a kind of basic requirement for any cultivar released to the commercial use. You should have a very good quality, appearance, firmness, color, good eating qualities. So this is basically for the consumer's perspective.
Check out the trio of Joy peaches in your market. They're great in pies, cobblers, and straight up as a healthy, tasty snack. Fats, oils, margarines. We use them when sautéing, frying, and baking our foods, and they can enhance the taste of our foods as well. But certain fats and oils, such as trans fats and fully hydrogenated fats, can be harmful to the body and lead to serious diseases. Wouldn't it be great if the oils and margarines you cook with were actually healthy for you and still enhance the flavor of your foods? Well, it's not as far-fetched as you may think. Researchers at ARS's Functional Foods Research Unit in Peoria, Illinois, are mixing common cooking oils with waxes to create oleogels, which you can say is the secret sauce behind a healthier cooking oil.
What we're trying to do is find ways of replacing saturated fats. They're necessary for a lot of food products where you need that structure in the fat and you also need the stability. Saturated fats are more stable, so oxygen doesn't attack them and it doesn't create these off flavors and odors and reducing the shelf life of the food as quickly with saturated fats. So how can you get that solid at room temperature without having the saturated fats? It's a difficult problem and one that ARS has worked on actually for a long time. When we started working here in this research unit, we started looking at what are some alternative methods, and one of those is the oleogels.
This area of oleogel science has really opened up a whole lot of potential in foods and creating healthy foods and new foods.
That's research chemist Dr. Jill Moser, who works with fellow research chemist Dr. Hansik Wang on creating oleogels that improve the health benefits of our cooking as well as the food we eat. Oleogels are gels in which the constant liquid phase is oil. That sounds pretty sciencey. I'll let Dr. Moser explain.
Here in this little vial, I'm showing you some wax material that we have. It's actually a mixture of beeswax and candelilla wax. And then we add oil to that material. And you can see that the oil and the wax are still not mixing because this is at room temperature. And what we can do is we heat this up in an oven or on a hot plate. And we will use a little mixing and we'll heat it until the wax melts. And we'll use some mixing to disperse the wax throughout the oil. And then we'll cool the mixture down. And as it cools, the waxes crystallize. They form small crystals. And those crystals network with each other. And they form like a three-dimensional network.
The final product is a semi-solid and looks similar to a light, fluffy spread. The color of the spread, as well as the solid state, depends on the ingredients you use. And yes, you heard right. Dr. Moser was mixing the oils with wax, mainly beeswax or wax from the candelilla plant. Dr. Wang noted that the wax is key when trying to duplicate similar properties to typical oils and margarines.
In our lab, we use oleogel in place of conventional solid fat to make margarine samples. And then we use these margarine samples to check if they have similar properties compared to commercial margarines.
It can be used to make a margarine. It can be used as a shortening in baked goods. And it can be used as a solid fat in just about any type of food product where you would use a solid or another type of shortening or a margarine or even a lard.
It sounds easy. Like just add wax and mix? But this is where the science comes in. Researchers have to determine what types of waxes and oils to mix, and how much of each, how long do you mix, what properties are you looking to create, and what other ingredients do you add to enhance the product? For example, some researchers have mixed oils with fish oil to produce a product with more healthy omega-3s.
As long as you deal with this fishy smell or something, then even fishy oil can be used in margarine or ice cream, whatever you feel guilty when you eat them. But at some point, we might be recommended to consume these good desserts because they have a lot of omega-3 oils. So yeah, basically any kind of oil can be used, and there is no big difference in physical properties if you make these oils like oleogels.
Fish ice cream? I'm not sure if I'm adventurous enough for that. Maybe mint chocolate fish ice cream. Okay, we're getting off target here. The point is that you can use a variety of different products to make margarines and oils healthier for you, including waxes. Now, you may not know this, but many foods in the market today include wax ingredients, such as oils and spreads, confections, and as stabilizers for things like peanut butter.
People do consume waxes. They occur naturally in all plant-based foods. It's nothing really all that new. And that's one of the reasons why we focused on waxes, is that you don't have to use a high amount to get an oleogel. You can use a very low amount.
If you eat like sunflower seeds, you already eat a lot of sunflower wax. Some studies show that waxes have health benefits like lowering cholesterol levels.
Basically, waxes are a fatty substance, so they're made of the same types of components that regular fats and oils are made of. They're just configured in different ways.
And because waxes occur naturally in plants and some animals, such as beeswax, it adds to the sustainability of our food supply. It also lessens our reliance on imported oils, such as palm oil. But most important, these wax-based oleogels can provide consumers with a healthy choice for preparing and making their meals. And that's something Dr. Moser doesn't mind waxing poetic about.
Yeah, definitely. I would like to see foods more healthy. And I would just like to know that the food products that are being sold are a healthy choice for all consumers, whether or not they are like me and study all of the labels, or whether they just go and buy things because they taste good, which I do as well. I do that too. But as a working mom, it's not always easy. I find myself buying more and more things that will make for a fast meal at the end of a long day. But I'm always conscious of whether it's a healthy option or not. And so I would love to see more healthy options that are easier and faster to prepare, especially during the work week. I can do it, I can do it, I can do it better.
I can do it, I can do it, I can do it better. Oh, it's incredible!
She's known to do this!
Dr. Tara McHugh may be the GOAT when it comes to creating foods that are both healthy and tasty. Dr. McHugh and her team found a way to boost vitamin D in mushrooms. She's developed all-natural fruit bars that stay moist and flavorful without artificial preservatives. And she created a micronutrient-packed bar that improves metabolic health markers, from cholesterol to blood sugar to inflammation. But perhaps her signature creation was a tasty wrap made from fruits and vegetables.
This was an exciting project that I had the pleasure of working on with a small company, and it was to develop healthy wraps from fruits and vegetables. The idea came during graduate school. I worked on edible films. No one prior to this had developed films or wraps from fruits and vegetables. When I came to USDA, I was put on a project looking for ways to add value to fruits and vegetables and ways to reduce waste in fruit and vegetable production. And this was a fantastic application to meet all those needs and provide healthy, tasty wraps.
While flavor and health were two priorities when it came to Dr. McHugh's research, she wanted to tie in another benefit, using otherwise discarded fruits and vegetables as the main ingredients in her wraps.
They come from, in large part, fruits and vegetables that are, say, too small for the fresh market or might be irregularly shaped and therefore not suitable for the fresh market. So it helped reduce waste in that sense.
Dr. McHugh and her team have developed a whole line of healthy, all-natural fruit and vegetable wraps that come in different flavors. There's mango, strawberry, tomato basil, carrot ginger, and if you like a little heat with your sweet, try the pineapple habanero. If you're into sushi, many of these flavors are also available for sushi wraps as a tasty alternative to nori.
And then the third application is as a glazed sheet for hams. Many hams that you buy in the supermarket have glazes on them. The traditional way that a company would put a glaze on a ham would be in a liquid form, and that's messy. What happens in this case is the company puts the actual wrap or film around the ham, and then when it's packaged, that film turns into a glaze as the moisture equilibrates within the package. And it's a fantastic way of adding fruit to the ham in a very convenient way.
Both the sandwich wraps and sushi wraps are sold by Origami Foods and available at many supermarkets. The wraps contain at least 75 to 90% fruits or vegetables. They're low in calories, low in fat, and free from additives, preservatives, or artificial flavors or colors. The wraps have a shelf life of a year, and they hold up to sandwich dressings, sauces, and other condiments without getting soggy or falling apart.
Every application of the wrap requires a slightly different formulation. So we needed to develop a wrap from materials that are very what we call hygroscopic. They love water, that means, that would not dissolve when you put it into the final form. So if you put rice and sushi inside it, we needed a wrap that would hold up long enough such that that sushi could be sold in the supermarket and the wrap would still be intact, or in a sandwich form, that the wrap would maintain its structure until it's consumed.
Check out the promo video to see what the packaging looks like and give them a try. And while you're sinking your teeth into a healthy, tasty wrap, think about how cool it would be to sip your drink with a straw that's not only biodegradable, but edible.
There's been interest in straws that could be made, edible straws from these fruits and vegetable wraps, that you could drink your drink and then eat the straw afterwards. And in that way, it would solve issues around disposal of straws and waste and environmental issues around that. Another application that hasn't been realized that is possible is using the wraps as covers for your leftovers. You can cover up pasta with a tomato film, for example, and then store it in your refrigerator. And then you could add the tomato film to the pasta and microwave it, and it would form a sauce when you eat those leftovers.
These two applications, the drinking straws and the leftover covers, could go a long way toward reducing our reliance on plastic and could pave the way for more earth-friendly products to replace one-time use plastics.
We work with, you know, a number of companies whose focus is on reducing waste and improving environmental impact of foods while also improving health and providing a flavorful end product that consumers will enjoy. So it's particularly rewarding and nice when all those positive endpoints can come together.
It must be pretty wild walking into a market and seeing a food package that you created. Even better that the food you created can appease both parents and kids. I can't wait to see what the goat is going to come up with next.
I've really appreciated working for ARS and being involved in these type of impactful research projects that help improve all sorts of things in the world. So we're providing more fruits and vegetables. We're helping farmers. We're providing jobs in rural areas, and then producing these end products that are healthy and flavorful as well and can improve nutrition. So I'm just very grateful to work for ARS and to have the opportunity to work on a variety of high impact, rewarding projects with outside partners.
Here at ARS, we are constantly researching ways to make the food in your shopping cart healthier and tastier, including for those who have to be careful about the food they eat. While we don't have time to name all new varieties we've created, here are some recent highlights. ARS scientists in Peoria, Illinois, are developing a healthy, gluten-free noodle made out of the ancient grain amaranth. Also in Peoria, scientists work with industry partners to develop an all-natural, low-glycemic sweetener that can be used by diabetics. In Albany, California, ARS scientists developed a resistant starch pasta that provides a healthy and tasty alternative for people with low insulin sensitivities and high blood sugar. For those who need more iron in their diet, researchers in Ithaca, New York, developed the Manteca Yellow Bean, a new fast cooking bean variety that has enhanced iron bioavailability. Looking to add more wheat to your breakfast? ARS researchers in Pullman, Washington, developed a new waxy wheat variety that puffs well and has a crispy texture, making it a healthy, crunchy, and tasty part of your breakfast. Back to Peoria, where researchers are adding a healthy punch to yogurts by adding chickpea flour. Good news for those who need more protein and fiber in their diet. And for those who love to bake but are looking for a healthier alternative to refined white flour, ARS researchers have developed peanut flour, which is low in fat and high in protein, chia oat flour, which is rich in omega-3 fats, and wine grape seed flour, which contains healthy proteins, lipids, and antioxidants. Learn more about these and other healthy varieties on our website, ars.usda.gov. We're all into automation these days. Self-driving cars, self-moving vacuums, self-cleaning surfaces, but self-pollinating crops? Well, that's nuts. Actually, it's more like almonds. You see, agriculture is getting in on the automation action with a self-pollinating almond called Urizani. Okay, so self-pollinating almonds have actually been around for centuries in Europe. A variety called Tuono originated from Spain, but it wasn't a very popular almond because its outside was hairy.
Ugh, yuck!
Urizani is the first self-pollinating almond in the US, and it has traits that industry and consumers are looking for. Think size, color, and flavor. Oh, and not hairy. Definitely a deal breaker for me when eating almonds.
Yuck!
Surprisingly, the origin of Urizani is linked to the feared invasion of Africanized bees in the early 1990s. Africanized bees are very aggressive honeybees, and they could viciously attack both humans and animals that they see as a threat. They also attack other bees and could have caused a major stir for crop farmers.
Actually, I started started the beginning of developing self-pollinating almonds. It was due to the concerns of Africanized bees that would be invading the San Joaquin Valley and really destroying almond production. That was the thought in the early 1990s when I started this work. As it turned out, the Africanized bees were not as much of a threat to almonds as we thought, but it did get us moving down the road to developing new self-pollinating varieties.
That's ARS research geneticist Craig Ledbetter, who works at the Crop Diseases, Pests, and Genetics Research Unit in Parlier, California. His self-pollinating almond is big news for the $6 billion California almond industry, and especially for the almond growers in the San Joaquin Valley, where around 80% of the world's almonds are grown. But why is self-pollinating such a big deal? Well, in the California almond fields, there just aren't enough bees to pollinate all the almond trees. Farmers have to bring in bees for hire, which can be expensive. The self-pollinating almond saves farmers money and frees up beekeepers to pollinate other crops.
self-pollinating varieties also alleviate some of the cultural problems that you have in the orchard, because instead of, you know, two varieties in the orchard, which is typical of the non-self-pollinating types, and those two varieties would have a matching bloom that would assist in pollinating each other, but then they would have different harvest periods because almond growers get penalized if they have a mixed lot of kernels. You've got to have varieties that are separated. So to keep them separated, harvest periods need to be separated as well. And by doing so, that adds to problems in the orchard, particularly with irrigation management and some of the crop care products that are applied. So having a single variety in an orchard capable of pollinating itself and setting a crop, it alleviates some of those problems that we have by having a mixed orchard of two varieties.
Nurseries began growing their Yorizani self-pollinating almond tree in January 2021, and Dr. Ledbetter expects more trees will be grown this year. The Yorizani almond has done very well in testing. In fact, in 2019, the Almond Board of California tested more than 60 almond varieties from around the world. Yorizani consistently scored near the top in almost every category, in the end, making it one of the best-rated varieties.
The one thing that I want to say about Yorizani is it roasts rather well, and it has a very good and audible crunch to it. There have been a number of almond marketers who have looked at it in blind taste tests, and Yorizani did very well in those tests in terms of its potential for marketing.
The name is certainly interesting. Yorizani. Where did it come from?
Yorizani is the family name of the family that owned the property where our San Joaquin Valley Agricultural Sciences Center is actually located. This was the Yorizani farm. They were stone fruit, almond, and grape growers. During that time, between when we acquired the property and when the center opened, the Yorizani brothers lived on the property, and our interactions with them for those 9 or 10 years were really quite interesting. We learned a lot about the property and some things about the trees on the property from the Yorizanis. So I did, having this almond being brought up as a seedling and evaluated and finally released, it was all done on this property. I found it appropriate to provide it the family name.
The Yorizani almond will certainly be a nice addition for the almond growers here in the San Joaquin Valley, and it won't be long before these delicious nuts are ready for your shopping cart. Thanks for listening to this healthier and tastier episode of Science in Your Shopping Cart. Check out our other episodes on our website and on YouTube. For Science in Your Shopping Cart, I'm Todd Silver.
Science in Your Shopping Cart is produced by the Office of Communications, Agricultural Research Service, an agency of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For more information, visit www.ars.usda.gov. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Like us on Facebook, and watch us on YouTube.